in the KS Arnold Kitchen. Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash. Good morning, Chef.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Want to mention a couple items that people might want to put on their calendar before we meet our guests today. Carla Lally Music, isn't that a wonderful name?
It is.
Carla Lally Music.
It sounds very musical.
She's the food director at Bon Appetit. She's been there for about 11 years. She's going to be at Omnivore Books on Food in San Francisco this coming Wednesday. The book is called Where Cooking Begins, Uncomplicated Recipes to Make You a Great Cook, 6:30 to 7:30. It's absolutely free. And the book is quite lovely. She's quite a ball of fire. Mm. So there's something you might want to put in your calendar. And next Saturday, it's the annual Garagiste Festival in Sonoma, in the actual town of Sonoma, at the Sonoma Vets Building, which is right on First Street, right off the plaza. So what is a garagiste?
Well, the garagistas are the people who make wine in their garage. You know, it was where it got its name. And it really came to us, I think, originally from France, because there are all of these, you know, basically, you know, one half step above home winemakers who were making wine every bit as good as the professionals, but there wasn't ever very much of it. So this is a really great chance to try some outstanding wines that aren't available anywhere.
Yeah, they're small producers, these garagista wineries. And most of them don't have tasting rooms. 70-80% do not have tasting rooms, which is interesting. And they draw from Napa, Sonoma, Mendocino, Lodi, Sierra Foothills, and more. There's more than 40 of these small winemakers that'll be in Sonoma April 13th. And there's a lot of innovation and handcrafted wines. These are 1,500 cases or less wineries, and as I mentioned, that don't have tasting rooms. It should be a lot of fun. And there'll be some unusual varietals, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I've been to this one time.
Yeah.
Like when we do our East Coast wine show.
Right.
Wine grapes we've never heard of, which is fun. There'll be things like Grenache Blanc and Ribolla Gialla and Verdello, which some people have had before.
Yeah.
Saint Laurent, some of these more unusual ones. These are kind of ones, like on the dating service, they wouldn't match these grapes probably in a particular bottle.
No.
But these guys and gals, they don't have any tasting rooms or minimums cases that they have to sell. They're more experimental, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So this is happening, as I mentioned, in Sonoma next week. It sells out, and that's why we want to tell you about it now. The grand tasting is from 2 to 5 next week. There's different price levels depending on what you want to participate in. There's a VIP event, and then there's a chat with Andy Pay from Pay Vineyards and Carol Kemp from Alma Fria Wines. That's kind of a separate admission. The all-day ticket, et cetera. They run anywhere from $65 to $115, and the $115 gets you a catered lunch from Girl and the Fig, which is nice, too.
Yeah.
The best way to do it would be to go to CaliforniaGaragista.com, California Garagista, G-A-R-A-G-I-S-T-E-S, to buy tickets. You can go to Eventbrite. That's how they're selling tickets, too. But put it on your list. It's really strange and wondrous.
It's magical. You know,
it's really magical
what these people do. And because they're so hands-on, I mean, they really know their wines. It's not like they've got a 10,000-gallon vat someplace that's fermenting away. I mean,
and not that USA Today's endorsement should make you want to go to this, but they did mention that this was America's best wine festival. Last year, they said.
That's great.
So it's pretty cool. It's next Saturday, and it's right here in our hometown of the city of Sonoma. So we've done that. And by the way, if folks love cauliflower, they should certainly check out your Press Democrat article from this past Wednesday.
Wild.
You worked hard on that.
Well, I did. It's the title of it is Cauliflower, the New Kale. And it is. You know, it's taking the place of kale, and it's really a lot more versatile, I think. Kale's good. But cauliflower you can do so much with.
And you have bagnacotta in there, and you have a California sauce and puree and a charred cauliflower and potatoes and roasted with walnut oil and Korean fried cauliflower, cauliflower fried rice, which is kind of the darling of the cauliflower world.
Right yeah,
now,
yeah.
Which is quite good.
And there's a cauliflower, I think the next one, a cauliflower risotto.
Yeah.
So substitute cauliflower for the rice. And the interesting thing about it is, I mean, if it's an issue for people, cauliflower is way down on the glycemic index list and all of that stuff. So it's a great replacement for white potatoes and white rice and those kinds of things, which will spike your blood sugar in just a moment. You know, if you just look at them, your blood sugar spikes.
So look for that article on cauliflower in Wednesday's Press Democrat. A while back, you sent me you forwarded me a marvelous piece on Devil's Gulch Ranch,
yeah,
which I'd not heard of. And
yeah.
You said these guys are quite amazing. John Asher and Company, Thomas Schmidt, executive chefs, buy some of their products. And he said, there's not many people like these folks from Devil's Gulch left anywhere, especially in the Bay Area.
They're crazy.
And
they're here.
And they are here in our Chaos Arto kitchen this morning, Mark and Miriam Pasternak. And thank you both for coming up from the beautiful hamlet of Nicasio, California.
You're welcome. We're glad to be here.
Thank you. How long did it take you to get here today?
Not long, 45 minutes.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Now, usually are you at the Ferry Market building on Saturday?
Yeah, we have a booth at the Ferry Plaza, San Francisco Ferry Plaza, on Saturdays, and at the Marin County Civic Center on Sundays. So my daughter is at our booth along with an employee today.
So can you give us briefly your history? How did you get into this business?
Well,
born and raised on a cattle ranch in Montana, right?
No. I was born and raised in Los Angeles and hated every minute of it. I wanted to be a cowboy and live in the country since I was two. And I've been lucky enough to find the property in Nicasio, and it's pronounced Nicasio by
That's
the old
That's what
timers.
I said. Yeah. I said it.
And
Not Nicasio?
No.
Oh, okay. They know you're a tourist. Okay.
No, what's the cheese company from down in Nicasio?
Nicasio Valley.
Yeah.
I had mispronounced it years ago when they were on the show. And I said Nicasio. And he said, it's Nicasio, Steve.
Yeah.
Nicasio.
There's
this is apropos nothing, but there's a corollary to that, and you can like when you're up in Chico or something, you never say almonds, it's almonds.
So when you were under 20 years old, many years ago, 50 years almost probably, you came north with the idea of what, becoming a rancher farmer?
Yeah, I wanted to just find a place in the country and live and hopefully make a living there. And so I was lucky enough to find the property that I have. It's originally was 65 acres. We have 75 now. And
it was part of a larger parcel.
It was part of 873 acres. And there was a guy that bought it, a developer, and his hopes was to split it into parcels and sell them off, which he did. But at the time I looked at it, nobody wanted it. It was selling for $550 an acre, and nobody wanted it.
Isn't that?
he couldn't get a taker. I was the first person. And so anyway, we were lucky enough to make it happen, and I started with some pigs. I had the horses. I had a couple of horses. They were my first love. I got a few pigs and started just having a few animals. I met Miriam in back early 80s.
Yeah.
And we got married in 87, and she went to vet school and was interested in large animal food animals and in international ag development. And I'll let you tell some more of her story, or she can tell it. But we had a couple of girls, and we were raising rabbits. My wife's family's French, and we were liked raising animals, so we raised a few rabbits and we were eating them. Her mother was quite the accomplished French cook, and she would get the rabbits from us, and she had a French chef she knew from the Bay Area French community and over for dinner, and he wanted to know where she got the rabbit. And the next thing we knew, the phone was jumping off the hook with the French Laundry, Chez Panisse, Jardiniere, calling me asking, we heard you have, fresh rabbit. We want it. So we were in the rabbit business.
This was in the 1970s.
No, 90s.
So can I, just for my own curiosity, you got, again, when you started with rabbits, was it because of a 4-H project with your daughters or something? Is that
we, Yes, that's yeah. that's. I mean, that's how it developed. Uh-huh. I think we had a few rabbits before that, right? No.
No, actually, in the community of Nicosia, they didn't have any livestock in their 4-H, and they wanted to, being a veterinarian, they asked me if I would find a way to get some kind of livestock program going, and we tried to find something that any kid could do, whether they lived on a farm or not. And so the idea of rabbits seemed like a good one because you can raise them in a backyard mm-hmm. or in a house. Or,
and they're so cute.
Yeah, you know, they can be. They could do it as a pet, or they could do it as a livestock animal. And the idea really took off. And there was a great club already in San Rosa. And even though I was trained as a veterinarian, I knew nothing about raising rabbits themselves. So I learned from the 4-H leader here in Santa Rosa, mm-hmm. and then I would go and teach my kids down in Marin, and it kind of just grew from there, and then the word kind of got out. And
where did you grow up, Miriam?
I grew up in Sonoma, actually.
In the town of Sonoma?
Just outside of the town of Sonoma. We had a couple of acres, and my mom would raise a couple of sheep and some...
Is your mom from France?
Yes, both my parents were born and raised
there. So you were raised bilingually?
Yes.
Oh.
And we had, you know, the small, typical little farm where we had ducks and mm-hmm. we had a couple sheep and a garden and whatnot. So I got exposed to all that. And a lot of horses. My dad was real into horses.
And are you a meat eater?
Yes.
You are. You're not a vegetarian.
My daughter's a vegetarian.
Yeah. Okay. So you're not a vegetarian veterinarian.
No. I was a vegetarian for a short period of time when I was in college, but mostly because I couldn't afford good meat.
Yeah.
The stuff that we had access to in the dorms and stuff was so horrible that I couldn't eat it. So I gave it a shot, and then when I finally started making some money, I quickly got back to eating meat.
Good meat.
Yes, good quality meat. And also I learned where the food came from,
yeah.
which had a big impact on me, and so I stopped wanting to eat industrialized meat.
Yeah. Because it was so can you give us just a quick rundown of all of the animals that you now offer?
Well, we have... we have pork, rabbit, we have three kinds of chicken. We have the poulet de bresse, we have the poussin, and we have silky chickens.
Let's go over those for people that don't know.
Okay.
The breast chicken
is a heritage breed from France, several hundred years old, and they are believed by many to be the best chicken in the world, mm-hmm. but of course the French feel that about everything.
Mm. Well, what do you think about it?
I think they're wonderful. I haven't had all the chickens in the world, so I can't say if they're the best, but they're certainly amazing. They take a long time to grow. They're usually 4 to 5 months old and dressed, they're about 3 pounds. So by comparison, a Mary's chicken dressed out at 3 pounds is 5 or 6 weeks old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weeks.
Yeah.
So a lot more flavor.
Yes. They have a lot of flavor development.
Kind of like hang time.
Exactly. Yeah. On the grapes. Yeah. There are other chicken breeds that people are raising longer times on pasture and stuff, and those have more flavor.
So we were talking before the show, the poulet de bresse was, for a time, we couldn't get it in this country. I did my training a long time ago in France, and I love them so much because they are so flavorful and delicious and beautiful with their beautiful blue legs and all of that. But you couldn't get them in this country. And you were telling me, you don't have to go through the whole story, but that there's probably just one source that the breast chickens that are in the United States came from.
Yes, as far as we can tell, we've researched it, and there was only one person that's ever actually imported them into the United States, and that's a small farm in Florida. And all of the breast chickens in North America, directly or indirectly, come from that source. And so there's a very limited genetic pool, but there's a limited genetic pool in France mm-hmm. also. Okay. And that's part of the reason why people don't raise them commercially here. The big reason is it's hard to get enough money for them because they take so long, but they also grow at different rates. So out of 100 breast chickens that you raise, you'll get, 50 or 60 that grow pretty good. You get 10 that really grow good, and you'll get 10 or 20 that are just kind of runty. And there's nothing, you can't do anything about it. It's the lack of genetic diversity.
So that's the breast chicken. The next one you sell
was poulet, poussin. Yeah.
Poussin. Poussin is a size designation. It is not a breed. So you can have virtually any breed of chicken could be a poussin. It is basically a baby chicken. So it's about a dress. They're about a pound to a pound and a half. Mm-hmm. So they're similar to a game hen in the United States. A game hen is should be about 2.5 pounds rather than a pound to a pound and a half. Mm-hmm. And they are the extreme opposite end of the spectrum in chickens from the breasts. So where the breasts are full-flavored and have a firmer texture, these are just little butterballs. They're very, very delicate, very, very tender, but neutral. They're like they are veal chicken. Mm. So they're like, as John said earlier, a clean palate, a clean slate, and you can do a lot with them. But they're a thing that they're really pronounced claim to fame is their texture and just delicateness. So that's the other one we raise. And then we raise the silky chickens. And silky chickens are also called the black chicken. That's their nickname. And the Poulet de Bresse, or the breast chickens, are nicknamed the blue leg chicken. But there are others also. And there are other black chickens also. But the silkies are the best known. And they have black skin and black bones. And they are possibly the oldest pure breed in the world. They are from China. They are used extensively in Chinese medicinal cuisine, but not exclusively. They're hard to find. Most of what you do see in the United States are the type that have been raised for pets or for shows. So they're pretty, but they're not very meaty. We were able to locate a strain. Miriam was able to locate a strain that are more of a meaty strain. That they were intended as meat birds, and so they are bigger and better for that. And they're interestingly enough fairly popular.
How would you describe the flavor of those?
Well,
and texture.
I mean, they are they're older chickens. Uh-huh. Also, they're probably 3 to 5 months old when we harvest them. So they're stronger flavored. They, for lack of a better word, they are gamier. Mm-hmm. Most of the game animals that are raised domestically are not gamey flavored. Because you're feeding them grains and raising them in a livestock situation. But the two that do maintain or retain their gamey flavor is quail and the silky chickens, at least that I'm aware of. And so they've got that. Their texture is, they're much firmer. It's hard to really describe it other than that.
Is this the chicken that would be used maybe for a bone broth? You
yes.
said it's a more medicinal
yes.
type.
They were mostly used for soups, stews, and broths. Yes.
We'll take a break at that point and be back with the two and only Pasternak's, Mark and Miriam from Devil's Gulch. Where did the term Devil's Gulch come from?
Well, that's a little bit of a story also, but we believe it was named that by the Indians, the Miwoks, who used to come through from the east side of Nicasio, Halleck Creek, where they had a village, and they would hike through Devil's Gulch to get to Taylor's Mill, which was a trading post, okay? And the area of Devil's Gulch is a well-known mountain lion habitat. And when the mountain lions strike, they send out this screech that sounds like a devil, attacking.
Yeah.
And we believe that that's probably where the name came from.
That sounds like a campfire story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay, Mark and Miriam from Devil's Gulch Ranch in beautiful Nicasio, California in Marin. I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash in the KS Arto Kitchen this morning.
Sonoma County's local news, weather, and traffic station, FM News Talk, KSRO, 103.5, 94.5.
Agricultural community farmers markets bring you fresh produce, meat, and dairy each week. year-round.
Wednesday and Saturday mornings, 8:30 to 1, continue the tradition at the Santa Rosa Community Farmers Market at the Veterans Building across from the fairgrounds, rain or shine. It's time to plant starts. Soda Rock Organic Farm from Hillsburg has basil, pepper, and a plethora of tomato starts. Rincon Valley's Triple T Farm has a whole host of organic plant starts, plus organic microgreens to spice up your salads. Skyview Farm has lots of flower starts. Olson Farm is back with greens, head lettuce, root veggies, and edible flowers. Rincon Valley's Camacho Farm has locally grown lettuce, celery, radishes, and Brussels sprouts. Stop by the Greek table for some great hummus and pita chips. Bud's Custom Meats has you covered for Easter. Order your Easter ham now so you won't need to worry later. And get the fresh catch at Santa Rosa Seafood. Find out why we were voted best farmers market in Sonoma County again in 2018.
Check out communityfarmersmarkets.com.
Start your career as a full-time bartender or beverage server at Grayton. Meet Sergio from 630 Park Steakhouse.
One of the things that I believe is very important is stability. We offer not only full-time, but the benefit package is ridiculously good.
Enroll in our free bartender school today. Earn great pay plus tips in a fast-paced and fun environment. Visit GraytonResortCasino.com for details.
Have you and the family talked about hitting the highway and taking that dream vacation? A weekend getaway to the mountains or the coast? Santa Rosa RV has been making those dreams come true since 1992. Santa Rosa RV puts their customers first and foremost with a no-pressure, relaxed experience while looking for their new or pre-owned recreational vehicle. Quality brands like Rockwood, Grand Design, R-Pod, and KZ is what you'll find at Santa Rosa RV. Go to SantaRosaRVSales.com and make that dream come true.
This is Michael O'Shea, president of Amaturo Sonoma Media Group, asking for your support for our friends, neighbors, and loved ones recovering from the recent devastating and historic flood. Please make a gift to United Way of the Wine Country's Sonoma County Flood Recovery and Wellness Fund by texting Sonoma Flood to 85511. You can also visit UnitedWayWineCountry.org or call 707-528-4555 for more information. By living united, we can help our community recover.
Businesses, it's time to ramp up your human race efforts. This year's race is May 4th, and now is the time to sign up. Be a sponsor, engage your people, promote your brand, support your cause, fundraise, and connect with the community. Give your business and the employees the opportunity to be a part of the 2019 human race, May 4th in Santa Rosa. Individuals can also register to participate. Backed by popular demand, the Timed Runner segment. Register today at humanracenow.org. That's humanracenow.org.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
In the KSRO kitchen, Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash and the Pasternaks are with us, Mark and Miriam from Devil's Gulch Ranch in Nicasio, California, in Marin. It's wonderful to have them here. We're starting with their poultry line, and we've covered the different chickens, but let's move on to squab and quail. Would that be next, John? And what do you have, both frozen and is it all frozen or fresh?
No, it's both frozen and fresh. Yeah, the quail we've been doing quite some time. We're raising them now out in the Central Valley. I have a co-producer out there who's doing a really nice job, and he's right next to the processor, so the it makes it a lot easier in terms of getting them to the processor. But we've been developing, you know, better and better and more meaty and bigger birds. It takes a while, but their generational time is quick, so it can be done. So we do those. We only offer them whole, bone in. There used to be a processor in Fairfield who would do them a sleeve boned or boned out, but whole. Mm-hmm. At this point, there isn't any processor that'll do that for me. The squab is a new project of ours. I'm not sure if it's going to work out, but it's very challenging to raise them. They have to pair up. but they are just a delectable meat. Very delicate, but full flavored, dark red, rich. Anything to compare it to would probably be duck. But it's because they're very young. They're only about 4 weeks old, so they are very, very tender. And just an incredible. I think John was saying earlier, if he had only one meat to eat, it would be squab.
It would be. It's the most, I mean, for beef eaters, this is the beef of the bird world, I think, you know, that they're so, and they're even when they're farm raised, they have delicious flavor.
Yes.
They're really,
John, we've posted three of your game bird recipes on the KSRO Good Food Hour website, and one of those is a squab with pomegranate, orange, marsala, and honey, which you credit Joyce Goldstein.
Yeah. I had it one time at our house, and I said, I want that recipe. So it's great.
And this is a wonderful recipe. And there's also a small bird Sardinian-style recipe, which you could use quail, partridge, dove, or other meaty little bird.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, and we should talk maybe just a moment about that, that the European traditions for game of all kinds, but especially game birds, is much richer than America's, although it depends on where you grew up, I guess. You know, like I know in Texas, dove is a big, you know, hunters are out for dove all the time and things like that. But it's not, you know, we in California, it always surprised me that there isn't a lot of exposure to these small birds.
Yeah, there's not that much. If if you know hunters, of course, they do. And, you know, duck as well as goose, and I have friends that are, you know, that my hunter friends are also fishermen, and they will come with the occasional salmon or sturgeon, which is really a treat. So that's nice, but it does seem like what's happened in the United States is the emphasis on meat production has been for profit, not for flavor or nutrition, and so it has been focused on those meats that are the ones that can be produced the quickest and fastest for profit. And that has been what's been popularized and been promoted. And that's why we are where we are. Whereas in Europe, and we don't have the long tradition, the hundreds of years of traditions with meat that the Europeans do. I mean, we have some traditions, but not the same. So, it's unfortunate, but it at least in the Bay Area, certainly, it seems like that has been changing, you know, in the last 20 or 30 years. The influence from European-trained chefs or chefs that staged in Europe would come over here, and I know a lot of times their first question was, where's the rabbit? You know, because they're used to cooking it every day there. But it is those same chefs want the quail, the partridge, the squab, and the guinea. People really like guinea. A lot of chefs. So, you know, there's an increasing awareness, certainly among the chefs.
So it's changing.
Yes.
So we're going to see more of that on a menu. And I asked you off air, for people who are listening to this, if they want to get something, you'll sell it to, but not just to chefs, but also to home cooks too.
Yes, I'm at the San Francisco Ferry Plaza Farmers Market on Saturdays, and the Marin County Civic Center on Sundays. And we can do direct to sales to you if you want to send us an email. We are working on a web store, and we're hoping to have that up before too long. But in the meantime, I don't have any problem just answering emails.
Okay.
And we can ship, and we can also arrange for you to pick it up.
I should mention that grilled quail with pickled figs and prosciutto is the third recipe, John, that we posted this morning.
They sound a little chefy, all of these recipes, but they're actually very simple to do. I think it's one of the important things, especially when we're talking about squab, my fave. The deal with that is don't overcook it. Yeah. Whatever you do, I mean, it's like, it's again like good beef. You eat it medium rare. You know.
Well, I think that I think that's true of almost all the meats, and you know, gradually that number that the USDA says you need to cook it to has been coming down, even by the USDA, but certainly within chef circles, nobody cooks chicken, you know, to 160 anymore.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen.
You wrote a book in 1991. Yeah. Here it is, my copy, American Game Cooking by John Ash with Sid Goldstein, where one of the things you addressed was how people are intimidated about cooking these game birds.
Yeah.
And you do a wonderful job in demystifying that it's not rocket science. You just need to be careful, like with anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
If you ever see a copy of this in the used book store, pick it up because it is an absolute classic.
What a nice guy you are.
Well, it is. Well, I got a free copy.
I'll say for the listeners, too, that I tell the customers, too, at the markets, with the certainly with the Poussin and the quail and the squab, I'll just spatchcock them, which is just cutting the backbone out. That's all. I used to get so intimidated, I didn't mm-hmm. know what it was. Mm-hmm. It's just you just cut the backbone out, and you lay it down flat. And I'll do that with any of those three birds, and salt, pepper, olive oil, and barbecue it.
Yeah.
Or broil it.
Yeah.
One or the other. And like the squab, it's like 3 minutes aside, 4 minutes aside. I mean, it's nothing. And it's really simple and really quick.
So is it fair to say that one of the reasons that people are becoming more interested in these birds is that after they've heard the horror stories of how conventional chicken is raised and all of that kind of stuff, these aren't. I mean, these are as natural, whatever that means, as they can be.
I would believe that would be true. Certainly, the squab are as natural as they could be, because in the wild, they would be in the nest until the time we harvest them anyway. The quail run around. They're not free range because...
They'd run away.
Yeah, or something would eat them.
Yeah.
But they're in giant...
giant... Aviaries.
Aviaries, yeah. But they're loose. And... let's see, and the Poussin, it's the same thing. They're raised in a giant brooder. Well, yeah. It's a brooder.
A brooder.
Yeah, giant brooder. It's a repurposed pot-growing container.
It is Northern California.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Let's take a break. We've covered poultry pretty well. We want to move on to rabbit next, John. Mm-hmm. Touch on pork and also sheep.
Yep.
And lamb, do you also?
Yes.
So a lot going on at Devil's Gulch.
Yep.
We'll take a break and be right back.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO-FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
Come to the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, voted best farmers market. Find a wide selection of garden starts, savor farm fresh eggs and produce like fresh strawberries, avocados, and asparagus. Enjoy farm-to-table almonds, walnuts, and healthy salad greens. Discover quality beef, pork, fresh seafood, and freshly made sausages. Multiple food vendors are serving up an excellent breakfast and lunch using farm-fresh products. Minhee's Korean Cuisine, The Green Grocer, Mi Fiesta's Fresh Tamales, and a whole lot more. Santa Rosa's original farmers market at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts is open year-round Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thank you, Sonoma County, for voting them number one. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
There's a better way to garden and landscape in Sonoma County. And it starts at a Better Way Produce and Nursery on Stony Point Road, just north of Todd in Santa Rosa.
Hi, Daniel R. Gibbs, botanical artist. I'm the award-winning resident licensed landscape designer and contractor. Our team has won first place 14 years in a row at the Sonoma County Fair's Hall of Flowers. And our garden, Coastal Charisma, won Best of Show 2018.
The nursery is ready for spring. There's spring color, bulbs, ferns, succulents, and houseplants all bursting with spring growth. Spruce up the yard or the house with flowers for Easter. Easter lilies and calla lilies are in stock now. Planning to landscape this spring or need a design for a rebuild? Ask Daniel about his design services and packages.
A Better Way Produce and Nursery, 3615 Stony Point Road, just north of Todd. A Better Way Produce and Nursery, open 7 days a week, 9 to 4:30.
With Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast, here's Daniel Trucios on the KSRO Weather Watch.
Cloudy and dry for most of the day, high 59, 56 on the coast. A few showers tonight, though, low 53, 52 on the shores. Morning showers for Sunday, otherwise cloudy at 65, 59 in Bodega Bay. Occasional showers for Monday at 63, 59 on the coastline. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
Miriam and Mark Pasternak from Devil's Gulch Ranch in Marin County are with us, Chef John Ash and Steve Garner. We've touched on the poultry portion of their game operation. We'll touch on pork and rabbit and lamb before the hour is up and make sure that you know that you can order direct from them or go to either the Ferry Market building on Saturday or the San Rafael Market on Sunday, where you have a booth there and you can buy direct from you. Should we do the rabbit next?
Because rabbit is the food of the people and has been for centuries, really.
Yeah, rabbit is a wonderful meat. It is very hypoallergenic. It is very easily digestible. It's one of the meats that doctors and veterinarians recommend for patients that have digestive issues. It's environmentally friendly to raise, largely because you don't let them run loose. If you let a rabbit go, it doesn't come back. There's been a number of attempts to raise them in free-range style, or we tried with movable coops over the grass, and it's very challenging.
Okay.
Commercially. But they're a very delectable meat also. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, what can you say, but it's similar to chicken. It's richer than chicken, although it is a better nutritionally, it's better for you. Higher protein, lower bad fats, higher good fats. Rabbit is a pseudo ruminant. Yeah, I'm looking at my wife to make sure I got that right. Which means that it is capable of digesting roughage more than a simple stomach animal like a pig or a human. And ruminants and pseudo-ruminants have higher levels of conjugated linoleic acid and the good fats.
So how do you cook the rabbit? It's very lean. What's the best way to cook?
It's extraordinarily lean, which is another plus for it. There's not a lot of fat or any of those kinds of things. What I find with rabbit is it's really two, if you get a good size rabbit, it's really two meals because they're the meatiest part is the back, or the two hind legs that are there. So that's the part that has the most meat. And then there are those beautiful little loins, you know, that like a tenderloin, that can be treated separately that are there. And then the front legs and things, there's not very much meat on them, but how they're used. And the Italians are typically masters of doing this, of taking that part of the rabbit and braising it and then picking off the little bit of meat that's there and making a ragu. And oh, it's really delicious. Or great stocks. And
fricassee.
Like and fricassee, yeah.
So that's the rabbit protocol. Let's touch on pork. And this is not your supermarket pork that you raise.
No, we raise mostly Berkshire crosses, which is very popular now, and they have a right to be. I believe them to be one of the, if not the best, pork for intramuscle marbling and flavor, and they grow well, they produce well. And we feed all byproduct feeds, which is, by the way, what we feed the breast chickens also. So we get organic bread and whey and milk and cheese and vegetables from a food bank. and it all goes into a slurry. It becomes a slurry, and the pigs just love it. So it's kind of.
Are you hear about corn-fed pork? Is that the way to go?
No, you know it's funny. The whole reason that the corn-fed meat in general got developed is because of the munitions people, the people making guns and bombs. See, in the World War I and II, we had a bunch of leftover weapons and powder and stuff, and it's basically nitrates, okay? So you'd spill this stuff, and stuff would grow like crazy. So they're looking at each other like, I wonder what would happen if we spread this out on that field. So they spread some of it out on the field, ammonium nitrate.
Yeah.
They spread it out on the field, and field grew like crazy. Whoa, what are we going to do with it? Well, why don't we plant this stuff the Indians had, this maize stuff? Let's see what happens. So they planted maize, and they gave it a bunch of ammonium nitrate, and stand back. Stuff grew like crazy. What are we going to do with it now? I don't know. Why don't we feed it to the pigs and cows? Well, it is not the best feed, in my opinion, for cows and pigs, and most of Europe agrees with me. Barley is by far a better feed for pigs. I can't speak so much for cows. I don't believe in feeding cows grain. They are a ruminant, and I don't think they should get grain. And the quality of their meat deteriorates when you feed them grain, the health quality. But pigs, I think barley is a much better feed source, and wheat is also. The flavor that you get from a barley-fed or a wheat-fed pig is much better than a corn-fed. Corn-fed animals, I think, are kind of neutral flavored, in my opinion.
So I've heard this comment that when you feed them corn, it actually makes them sick. I mean, over a long period of time.
Ruminants, yes.
Yeah.
It does not, their digestive system is not intended to be eating grains in that kind of concentration, and so that's one of the reasons they need all the antibiotics.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So do you find, Miriam, that the feed determines a lot of the health projections for these animals?
Oh yeah, I mean, we think nothing of the fact that dairy cows just have diarrhea all the time. We think that's normal because that's what we've gotten so used to, but that's not. You see a cow out in the field, a beef cow out in the field, it's been eating grass, and it has, its feces are solid. It's a patty, but it's
cow pies.
More, it's more solid. There's some form to it. It's not this pile of diarrhea that just flattens out. Like we see a lot of the dairies that just feed so much grain.
Yeah.
But you know, a lot of these decisions were made by researchers who were really after the return on investment and pushing the production and stuff. And that's creating a lot of health issues in the animals and subsequently to us. I mean, when was the last time you heard of a small farmer giving a bunch of people food poisoning?
No,
I mean,
you don't.
It just doesn't happen very often. It's usually somewhere linked with a big processing plant or some kind of large scale something. Production that results in food poisoning.
Before we move from pork, I remember years ago there was a huge chef drive toward Mangalista. Is that a breed of pork?
Yes.
That every chef was crazy. This was the greatest. Do you remember the breed ever? Do you use that in your breeding stock?
I've played with them a little bit. They have a place. Mangalistas are called the woolly pig also. They're a slow-growing, small pig. A heritage pig from I think Austria or that area, but they have a very different kind of fat. It's not very firm. It's almost softer. Liquidy at room temperature. Not the greatest intramuscle marbling, but a lot of fat. And I think they're really good for charcuterie. There's a winery up in Napa that Del Dotto does some of the best charcuterie I've ever had, and he uses a bunch of Mangalisa pigs for that. But most people that started off with purebred Mangalisas have been crossing them now on Berkshires or Tanworth, which are leaner pigs.
And when someone says Kurabuta pork, is that Berkshire pork?
That's just the Japanese name for Berkshire.
I'm always confused about
that. There's a whole story about that, which is the Japanese came here and got Berkshires from us after World War II and took them to Japan and didn't make them the other white meat, which is what we did here. They kept them a full fat pig, which is what they're supposed to. And then, I don't know, in the 60s or 70s, somebody discovered them and brought them back, and they were treated like a different breed, but they're not.
Oh, interesting.
They're just a different strain.
Certainly a big mistake around that, and high profile. Should we move to lamb, since that's our final meat?
Okay.
And what kind of lamb protocol do you have?
Well, the lamb we have, I started those grazing in my vineyard, which I have vineyards also, in the winter, because I just got so tired of it just drove me crazy, disking in or cutting all this beautiful grass. So I got a bunch of ewes and was grazing the vineyard. We used to have to bring them in every night because of the predators, but we got livestock guardian dogs now, and we also raise those. But the sheep, I had Dorsets for a long time, and they're excellent meat quality, but you have to shear them, and their wool is worthless. They're not a good fiber wool. So it was just worthless to have to shear them and throw the wool away. So we now have Katahdin sheep, which are crossed with haired sheep. And they shed their wool, basically, or don't have wool. Depends on the individual animal, but you don't have to shear them. And they have a good meat quality, good carcass quality, not very mutton-y flavored, if at all, because that flavor component in lamb comes from the lanolin in the wool. So if you got a haired sheep, he has very little of that. And we also harvest them. This is something I learned from Doc Watson over in Napa. We harvest quite a bit younger than most people. A lot of people like a 100, 150 pound live weight lamb, and ours are 50 to 75 pounds. So they're again going younger, more tender, more delicate. The lamb is still full flavored. They're out grazing 100% or nursing on their mothers, no grain at all.
So what's spring lamb?
That's spring lamb.
Okay.
Spring lamb is just young lamb, and it's called that because they're usually babies in the spring.
But it's available year-round, the lamb?
We have lamb year-round because we freeze it.
Okay. Education, outreach, tours. Miriam, would you address that? The farm is really open out. I was thrilled to hear that.
Yeah, a big part of what we really believe in is educating the public, and especially kids, about where their food comes from. And not just in this country. I've been working in Haiti for 12 years now with helping farmers there thrive and getting a lot of the information and technology that we have access to so readily, taking that over there and making it accessible and helping them develop income-generating agriculture as well. We have had a summer camp in the past with the YMCA. This year, we're looking for another organization to possibly do a camp this year because the YMCA has moved to another location. But we still do a lot of tours. We just recently had the Drake High School rock program come out over 2 days with their kids and do a tour through the ranch and hang out in nature and get their feet dirty and just enjoy the lousy weather and but they really enjoyed it and we do that kind of thing fairly regularly because I think it's really important for kids to get exposed to this stuff because a lot of kids don't have access to it anymore. We actually started those programs too because so many people would come to us and say, when I grew up, my grandparents had a farm and I used to go there on the weekends and the holidays and I loved it and we don't have that in our family anymore. Can we bring our kids out to your place? And so we started making it more readily available to families and stuff.
Are these scheduled? Is there a schedule?
No, usually you can just call? Appointment.
Okay.
We do most of them by appointment.
So school groups or individuals, families can contact you and say, we'd love to visit the ranch and see how you operate?
Yep.
Wow, that's wonderful.
And we are available, again, by appointment to come out and buy at the ranch from us. That's
So you can kind of kill two birds with one stone, so to speak.
Yes.
And do you sell whole animals too?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah, so we sell a lot of pigs for parties, for weddings, for roasts, lambs for roasts, things like that. I love the cajachina, the cajachina.
Isn't it great?
Oh, it's just wonderful. I've had so many people, get pigs for a party and ask how to cook them, you know, and I'm all, oh, God, you know. And so with the cacachina, it's just foolproof.
And what is it?
It's a plywood box. It's the weirdest thing.
It's a roasting box.
Box, but made out of plywood. Yeah. But all the heat
It is lined with metal.
It is.
So it doesn't just burn.
But all the heat comes from the top. The charcoal in the top of it. But it's the most unlikely looking gizmo that you've ever seen.
So we're almost out of time. The 45 minutes has flown by. You also grow wine grapes. And what wineries, vineyards... Produce your wine.
So we grow Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, a little bit of Riesling, a little bit of Gewürztraminer. We sell to Dutton Goldfield up here, Deloche, Hartford Court, Sean Thackeray down in Bolinas, a number of others, you know, it's...
Well, they must be good grapes, because that's a pretty august
And Miriam, you mentioned this coffee program you're working with Haitian coffee. Where can we buy the coffee?
Well, we have it at our farmer's market booth and at the ranch as well. And then there's also, I'm a co-owner with a business called HaitiCoffee.com, where we're selling it online as well.
And do you roast in Petaluma?
We roast in Petaluma, Petaluma Coffee and Tea. And then we do import that coffee directly from Haiti and work directly with the farmers there.
Well, we've just scratched the surface, and here we're out of time.
You two are the most ambitious. I don't know where you get all that energy.
Devil's Gulch Ranch. Go online and learn a lot more about the operation than we could cover in this 45 minutes. But Mark and Miriam, thank you so much for coming to Santa Rosa and visiting us.
You're
it was
very,
wonderful meeting you.
Very welcome.
We got to go down to the farm one
time. Oh, for sure. For
come
sure.
On, come
take,
on down.
I'll take my grandkids down there. They will
yeah,
love
absolutely.
It.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll take a break. Come right into news, actually. And then Clark Wolf at the table follows at 12:05. Back next week. And boy, we've got a dandy show. Ali Bazzari's coming to us. Ali writes the homemade column in the San Francisco Chronicle. He's a culinary scientist, a brilliant guy, and he's our go-to for anything scientific and culinary. And what a speaker. He'll be on the show next week live in studio. Steve Garner for Chef John Ash. Thanks for listening.